No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Huge news, Wayfair shoppers! There's still time to shop Wayfair's Cyber Week sale. Thought the savings were over? Think again! Cyber Week, aka the holiday home stretch, is on now! Right now, get up to 70% off everything home and everything you need for the season ahead. Save on quality furniture for every room in the house. Essentials for the guest room, whether it's new bedding or a new mattress. Kitchen and dining must-haves for all your hosting needs. And seasonal home finds like throw pillows and decor. Or favorites that you'll use all year long. Plus, you can sit back and relax. With Wayfair's fast and easy shipping, everything home comes straight to your home. Just in time for the holidays. Yep, even the big stuff. Didn't get everything on your Black Friday list? We got you. There's no place like home for the holidays and no place like Wayfair for Cyber Week savings. Shop Wayfair's Cyber Week right now through December 7th and save up to 70% off at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
What's up, everybody? Welcome on in. It's that time of week, the Sooners on SI Podcast, episode 280 here on this January 22nd. And you know what we're doing? We're doing a lot of watching. We're doing a lot of waiting. We're watching people. We're watching teams. We're watching defensive coordinators. We'll dive into all that here in a second. I'm Ryan Chapman, hanging out here in Moore. We're joined as always by the head boss man, Mr. John Hoover, up in the 918. John, how are we doing?
We're good. Happy birthday to my nephew in the Air Force, Anthony. He's a faithful listener and a big Sooner fan. He was in the Pride from 2000 to 2005, or 2004, so the heyday of the Bob Stoops heyday. And he is stationed right now overseas in Jordan. So shout out. Proud of you. Happy for you. Praying for your happy and healthy return. And happy birthday.
Huge. What time is it in Jordan right now? Hold on. We got to... It's 1:26 p.m. on a Wednesday.
It's tomorrow sometime, I think. I think it's tomorrow.
If Jim Knowles is the Oklahoma defensive coordinator and it doesn't break during this podcast, it's because we recorded at 1:26 p.m. on a Wednesday. Yep. In North, we got our guy Carson Field. Carson, it's been a big week, man. You've sustained an injury. You got the family dog. Like, it's the ups, the downs. Everything is rolling on.
It's a seesaw. A good thing getting my dog. She's asleep right now. Finger injury did not do anything good. That sucked. I am not great with Swiss Army knives. Lesson learned. But besides that, happy to talk some ball. As always, it's going to be fun. There is a lot to break down. So excited about that.
If you're going Swiss Army knife, Carson, it's got to be the corkscrew that got you, right? Please say it's the corkscrew.
No, it was the knife.
I will be getting him a can opener next Christmas, and we will roll with that.
Thank you.
We also need a better story. We need a better story. We know what happened. We need. You gotta see the other guy. That kind of thing.
Exactly. You should see the other guy right now.
Perfect. All right, friends. Like I said, things can change. Certainly, if anything breaks over this podcast, we will shift with the winds. But again, 1:27 p.m. here on a Wednesday, and we're in the crucial hours. We kind of talked about this last week, last 2 weeks. Oklahoma still looking for a defensive coordinator. Jim Knowles, the smoke just won't go away. And when you look at some of the other guys in the college football playoff, whether it's Allen, who made the jump from Penn State all the way over to Clemson, or whether it's Al Golden at Notre Dame, looks like he's in line to head to the Cincinnati Bengals. The crucial period for that guy seems to be 48 to 72 hours afterward. Nothing yesterday in the first 24 hours, nothing so far today, but Carson, if any Oklahoma fans were tuned in and watching the national championship game, Ohio State's defense obviously excellent for basically everything except for the Notre Dame last death breath, all that stuff. But we're just kind of still in the same spot of wait and see and trying to let this thing play itself out.
No, 100%, Ryan. This is a defense that was so good this past year. That is kind of a staple that Ohio State, regardless of who the coach is, dating back to the Trestle days, I mean, they have had great defenses all the way around, and that did not stop with Jim Knowles. And I think what is most telling about Jim Knowles is how good his defenses were at Oklahoma State. That is a program for most of my life. They have not had good defenses. By the time he left Oklahoma State, their defense was one of the best in the nation. Took them to a 12-2 season and beat Notre Dame in a bowl game, a Fiesta Bowl, I believe. And they were top 10 in the nation in yards per play, total defense, scoring defense, stuff like that. If you can do that at Oklahoma State, you can absolutely do that in Norman. So that's obviously there has not been anything confirmed, not a whole lot of movement in these last 72 hours or so. But that's something you have to be excited about, even the possibility. Bob Stoops seems to like it too. I don't think Sooner fans will hate that. So just the thought of it, it's got to be exciting.
Yeah, it's interesting. It goes back to when Mike Gundy hired him at Oklahoma State, John. I remember not covering it, but obviously we're in state. We're doing all that stuff. He was talking about how that was a guy that could do more with less at Duke. Was able to get the most out of that roster in Stillwater, like Carson just said. And then it helps when you got the $20 million budget that Ohio State was rumored to be rolling around with. But, John, it's one of those things where we've talked about this to death. It's kind of just waiting to see will it happen or won't it happen. But I am pretty interested in if this goes through, if this hire happens, kind of what it says about the growth process of Brent Venables, the head coach. Because, John, it feels like you went from Ted Roof to Zach Alley, which was that first step and maybe an understanding of I need someone who is very familiar with my defense, who can take over the day-to-day stuff during practice so I can be more of a head coach. Injuries didn't really let us see what that would look like or not this past year. This would certainly be a step beyond that. The part of the big negotiation would be like, we're growing my defense, your defense. We talked about some of the personal life stuff. When you talk about going from blue blood to blue blood, the money will be similar. A lot of the pros and cons will be maybe off the field stuff, but one of the on the field things is definitely going to be, John, we're running my defense, we're running your defense, who's calling it? Because I don't see Jim Knowles leaving Ohio State to run Brent Venables' defense.
Yeah, probably. I would probably agree with what you're saying there. A couple of things to note about Jim Knowles' defense is that when he was his final season at Oklahoma State, they were bad when he took over, and their rankings dropped and dropped and dropped all the way until they were like top five in the country in total defense. They led the nation in sacks, number two in tackles for loss. They were excellent at takeaways. But you look at, it was a similar progression when he got to Ohio State. You know, they were in the 30s, and then they were top five. And then last year, they think they were number two and number three. This year, they're number one in overall defense, number one in scoring defense. This is crazy. Number three in the nation in rushing defense, number three in the nation in passing defense. How the hell do you get good at both of those at the same time? That's fairly rare. So, you know, because usually if you're good at one, offenses are smart and they take the other. And so your passing numbers go up if you're good at rush defense, or your rushing numbers go up if you're good at pass defense. Nobody could do anything this year against Ohio State. Part and parcel, the Big Ten Conference, and they're notoriously conservative, slow-paced, sluggish offenses. But let's be honest, when you're number two or three in the country or number one in the country in a category, it's because you're really good at it. And Ohio State was. So Jim Knowles, in terms of his defense versus Brent's defense, they're both a 4-2-5. Brent likes to create chaos. Brent likes to create pressure and be creative when generating pressure on the quarterback. That's what Jim Knowles majors in, is getting people at the line of scrimmage to say, that's my assignment. I think that's my assignment. Is that my assignment? Does anybody know? Is that my assignment? That's what Jim Knowles' defenses do. I went back and pulled up a quote in a story that we're working on, hopefully for the future. I found a quote from Lincoln Riley, of all people, talking about Jim Knowles at Oklahoma State. And he's like, he tries to get your quarterbacks to do things that they don't want to do or that they're not committed to doing. He's a master at that. And, you could see it on Monday night when they took care of Notre Dame. After that opening drive, Riley Leonard and Notre Dame had no real answers offensively for a long stretch of that time, is because Jim Knowles was controlling, Jim Knowles and his defense were controlling the line of scrimmage, were making them guess, making them suppose, on what their assignment was going to be. So he's really good at that. So if you're Brent Venables, do you want Jim Knowles to come in and run your defense? I don't think so. I don't think so. I think you want him to come in and run his defense and have him kind of marry those two things together. And the players know this and he knows that, get them to come together instead of, okay, OU's defense is loaded, has a bunch of people coming back, a bunch of experience. Now I'm going to teach them how I do my defense. I don't think he's going to be hard line like that. I think it's going to be more of, hey, how do you guys, if I'm Jim Knowles and I'm coming to Oklahoma, how do you guys call this? How do you guys interpret that? What's your terminology for the way, what we did here on third down? I think it's he's a good enough coach and a smart enough coach to, we're sitting here talking about him like he's already been hired, because it's a largely presumed at this point that it's going to happen. There's a lot of T's to cross, a lot of I's to dot, a lot of hoops to jump through for OU, including salary. Okay. So we don't know yet who the next defensive coordinator is going to be. It looks like Jim Knowles. We've given you some of the reasons why we think it should be Jim Knowles or it will be Jim Knowles, but there's still a long way to go in the process, or at least maybe not a long way to go, but there's a few things left for OU to do to complete this process.
Yeah, and if it's not Jim Knowles, it feels like a very comfortable, probably back to where who of you and I expected it to be at the start. I know that Carson has nailed this. If it ends up being Jim Knowles, go, this would be the big splashy hire,
Yeah.
the big time thing. But it feels like a comfortable backup plan to just kind of roll with what you've been rolling with. One thing I am interested in, Jim Knowles had a ton of success in his last two stops. What does Ryan Day coach everybody? Offense. What does Mike Gundy coach everybody? Offense. What does Brent Venables co? Oh, difference there. Defense.
Defense,
Interesting to
yep.
see what that work relationship is like.
Turn that thing over to Ben Arbuckle and you're in the clear, right?
Yeah, just Ben Arbuckle acting. That's who Knowles gonna report to Arbuckle, and it'll be the same. No, bizarre. Regardless of what it was, if it is Jim Knowles and comes in and you are tweaking things like that, Carson, we did see on display in the Armed Forces Bowl. Yes, there were some big drives that Oklahoma wouldn't want, but most of that game was fine. Again, it was the couple of chunk plays here and there, but he'd be stepping in with an experienced defensive line. Everything we've talked about, right? Those guys that they're getting to come back, Armason Thomas, Dominic Williams. You're getting Kip Lewis and Kobe McKenzie back to lead that linebacking core. You've got a safety room you feel really good about with Robert Spears Jennings and Peyton Bowen, and then Boganowski and Hardy and Reggie Powers behind that. And you've got a what do you feel like a stud corner and Eli Bowen to kind of build that cornerback room around. Carson, it feels like you probably need another linebacker, probably need another corner, whether that's the post spring portal or not. But whoever steps in, it should be comfortable enough as far as you got experience. It's not like it's you're taking over a bunch of freshmen to you having to confuse and do all this stuff and keep it super basic. They can make those tweaks and probably get up and running pretty quick, I would think.
No, I think this is defensively a very good situation for Oklahoma, whether it's Jim or somebody else stepping into this new role. Brent being a defensive mind, if it is Jim, kind of marrying those ideas together, like John said, that could be great. I mean, getting Spears Jennings, getting Armason Thomas, Kip Lewis, so many guys that were centerpieces this year on the defense, amazing players. There's so much talent, and if they get the right guy, I really do think that this is going to be the defense that can lead them to what they can be. Arbuckle, that's a huge get for the offense. Mateer, obviously a huge get too. Some receivers from the portal. So I mean, just marrying the offense and the defense, what they've gotten, Kendall Daniels, Marvin Jones, people like that defensively. I think there is a lot of recipe for success. It has to be the right guy. But somebody that can work with Brent, I think that would be an amazing hire.
You mentioned some of those. Oh, go ahead,
I was
Hoofpass.
just going to say along those lines, if you're Brent and your last resort is to call your own defense, essentially have another Ted Roof kind of a puppet figure there. You've got some guys on staff who know how to do that. We've talked about it before. Brandon Hall knows how to do that. He's called defenses at Troy, and they were really successful at Troy for that level when he was there. So I think Brandon Hall's a guy that is familiar enough with Brent, familiar enough with Brent's tempo and his pacing and his what he likes to do, what he prefers, his preferences. And I think he's familiar enough with the defense that he could step in and say, Brent, I got this. I got this. We're gonna have success. You know why we're going to have success? Because we've got our Mason Thomas, because we've got Dominic Williams, we've got Jaden Jackson, we've got Grayson Halton. You know, those are just guys up front. They've got guys in the safe in the secondary that you mentioned previously. They've got guys coming back from injury, you know, in you know, your cornerback, Gentry Williams, and your linebacker hybrid, Kendall Dolby, and they've got guys coming in through the portal, Marvin Jones, Kendall Daniels. They've got some five stars waiting in the wings, PJ and David Stone. They've got some pieces that Brandon Hall would say, yes, Brent, I'll do it. I'll coordinate the defense, you know, because this, with this much talent, anybody coordinating this defense, shoot, there might be in the future, there might be a job waiting for somebody like that. You know, you do enough good things for the Oklahoma defense in 2025, you might be a head coach somewhere next year.
You too could be the West Virginia defensive coordinator. Think about it. Just
wow.
Almost
that was harsh.
Almost heaven. I enjoy Morgantown. I loved Morgantown. I've been to Morgantown. I loved it. Great Italian food in Morgantown. You mentioned all those portal pieces. Hey guys, don't forget, head over to the website, OklahomaSoonersOnSI.com. This week, we started our very, very popular offseason series from last year, Transfer Talk, where we hit up some of our colleagues across the country who have covered the guys that are transferring to Oklahoma, give you some insight on the kind of person that Oklahoma's getting, the kind of player, some strengths, some weaknesses from the people that covered them snap in, snap out every week for the past couple of years, doing a much better job. They lived it, right? Watching these guys, then we can go back and we can watch the film, and we have, and we will, and all that fun stuff. But we led off with John Mateer, who's piece to resistance on John Mateer, and we're snaking our way through that. So OklahomaSoonersOnSI.com. Be sure you hit up our Transfer Talk stuff. We're knee deep in series, as we got the Transfer Talk. We've got the Fresh Faces series on the softball front. That's like 1,000 words a day on OU softball, a release for a lot of people. So we'll talk about that a little bit later. Before we get to some of the off the field stuff, whether it be front office changes for Oklahoma, turning the page and peeking forward to next year, Ohio State did close down shop, win the national championship on Monday. Gentlemen, Carson, let me start with you. Let's just take a step back. The 12-team playoff, the mega conferences, this was a new, pretty landmark year in college football. How do you think it kind of went off? I personally, outside of tweaking the 1-4 seeding, I think if you just went through, hey, give me your top 1-4, give the conference champions the bids, I was really stoked with how the 12-team playoff ended up coming off kind of without a hitch.
Yeah, no, it was good. I think the top 8 were about appropriately seeded. I really do think that. Even Boise State, that game, other than a few plays, they looked very competitive. I'm biased. I'm an ASU alum. They looked very good against Texas. I really think, Indiana, SMU, they put together some bad performances. Clemson looked decent enough. The only thing I could say is that maybe they should have put BYU in instead of SMU. I know the debate was SMU or Alabama. Maybe BYU should have gotten in. But besides that, I think it went pretty smooth. It was a lot of fun. This many college football playoff games, you've got to love that being a college football fan. And I think the criteria is only going to be a little bit harder. It's going to see wins, losses, everything that's tough about judging schools. I think that's going to be even more scrutinized in the next few years. But overall, I think it was so much fun. I think most college football fans would agree with that. And I'm excited for next year.
The big thing I'd really want, Hoove, I don't know if we're just going to get it. I would love 2 rounds to be on campus because the on-campus games were incredible. I would have loved to see Texas have to head to Arizona State. Like, that would have been amazing. But That's one of those things that I think we all would agree with that, but it's almost like I'm wasting air because the Bulls have a stranglehold on money and stuff like that, and it's just like it's not gonna happen. But how'd you see this college football season just kind of structurally? Did it go? What are I guess the big red flags, if there were any, from this year one of the mega conference and expanded playoff?
Well, there's a couple of things I didn't like about the playoff, just in general. Now, here's what I liked. Here's one thing I liked is that there were a lot of schools who were invested late in the season. A lot of fan bases were saying, "Hey, we got a shot. We got a shot." Keeps everybody engaged. I love that. Okay, it's like 12 days of Christmas. It's like, come on, it's almost here. It's almost here. It's almost here. We're, almost to the end of the season, and we're still involved. I love that. Where I don't love that necessarily, I mean, I can't say I hated it. It just felt kind of dirty. It just felt kind of wrong for Ohio State to go into their biggest game of the year, Michigan, the Ohio State Michigan game, probably my second favorite college football rivalry behind OU Texas. And they absolutely crapped down their leg. They laid an absolute egg against a very, very mediocre Michigan team. And there were no consequences whatsoever, other than they didn't get to play for a Big Ten championship. They got their guts ripped out on national TV. They got their hearts torn out of their chest and shown to the world by a conquering bunch of Wolverines. And what happened? It's okay. We'll just win the national championship. It's like in a normal year, right? If this were a 14 playoff, Ohio State's eliminated. If this were the BCS, Ohio State's eliminated. Ryan Day probably gets fired. Or possibly, very possibly, gets fired for losing to Michigan again. He's got a Michigan problem. So I'm not sitting here advocating that I think Ryan Day should have been fired. I'm saying the way college football was just last year versus the way it is now, it's a totally different landscape. So I don't like that. I don't like that there literally were almost no consequences for losing, for suffering a bad, bad loss to your arch rival. Another thing I didn't like was the prolonged, dragged-out schedule that we're finishing college football in the middle of January. I don't like that. I don't like 2 weeks into January and we still don't know who the national champion is. I prefer if the world were perfect and I were making it in my image, I would say we would wrap up the national championship game within 3 or 4 days of New Year's Day. I don't know. It doesn't always have to be on New Year's Day, but that would be cool if it could, but it doesn't always have to because of the calendar, the holiday, the NFL playoffs, what day it falls on, all that stuff. I get that. But if we could get it over by January 3rd, January 4th, have it completely in the books, that would be cool. And then you could start your transfer portal stuff that we talked about last week. The new transfer portal window that's been proposed will, be open in January. So get the championship game over in January. Transfer portal starts in January, new season, like a fiscal year. It's like flipping the calendar. So that's a couple of things I thought about.
Dreamboat would be like if we get like the traditional Rose Bowl spot, like if that could just be the national championship game on January 1st. But we now have too many weeks to,
Yeah.
because then you run into on the other end of it of why do we not want to bleed too far in? Well, school's back in session. Well, then you're talking about, okay, we're gonna have to start the season in mid-August, which is shortens the off season. I'm all for a shorter off season, so I don't really mind the season closing down on the 19th or whatever. But it would you rather play in the 19th or would you rather be in Norman for three games in August and then the whole September slate we all might die? Like, you
Yeah,
know what I mean?
everybody would complain about the heat and the temperatures, at
Yeah.
least in the southern areas. That's fine. There's always going to be some complaining somewhere about something, so I'm cool with that.
It's one side or the other. You're gonna get that. I would also argue that Ryan Day personally would say there weren't no consequences to losing to Michigan. Until Monday night when he won the national championship, I think he was feeling the weight of those
And
consequences.
you know who else? I mean, everybody, Ryan, agrees with you. Everybody who loves college football agrees with you about the Rose Bowl hosting the Natty every year. You know who doesn't? The Orange Bowl, the Cotton Bowl, the Peach Bowl, the Fiesta Bowl.
Levi Stadium,
Those are
Mercedes-Benz.
the only ones in all of college football who would not want the college football national championship game to be played in Pasadena every year. Everybody else would be like, hell yeah. Even the national media going to Pasadena every year in January, that would be amazing.
Oh yeah, that
But
puts it
no.
right up there with get us an extra round of home playoff games. It's like that's great for everyone except for the Bulls.
Yes.
So, I was shifting around. This is on the rundown. the most important things this side of the football season, which is 4 months. I have had a stack of sticky notes that has sat in the corner of my desk. It is everyone's favorite time of year. Carson, you were not involved in this, obviously, as you weren't here, but we do have some preseason predictions. Let's see if they came home to roost. We're chucking the bold predictions and all that stuff just because that was like we all went the direction of if things went very well for Oklahoma, things did not go well. Nobody got close except for John. John had Bauer Sharp as the tight end reception leader. He ended up just being the reception leader for the whole. Yeah. So, John, good work. Yeah. Proud of you there. We both had Oklahoma going 8-4, missing the playoff. Well, we weren't close. All right, SEC title game. Both of us had Ole Miss over Georgia, so we had one half of the title game. Didn't go well. We both had Ohio State over Oregon in the Big Ten. Wrong champion. Both had the right Oregon there. The Big 12, shout out to the Big 12. John, you had Utah over Oklahoma State. We were trying to pick the champions, not the seller. I had Kansas State over Utah, which is like slightly better, but not great. So we tried that.
What a terrible pick that is.
Only to be outdone by Florida State over Miami in the ACC championship game for you, Hoove, and Florida State over Clemson for me in the ACC title game. So I just got one of those. John, your group of five representative in the college football playoff was the Boise Lane. State Broncos. Congratulations.
Oh, was it? Was it? I thought I picked Tulane. I think I picked Tulane as a dark horse.
No, you had Boise State. I had the University of Texas at San Antonio, who had just a laugher of a season. Wasn't great there. Who have you had Georgia beating Ohio State in the national championship game? I had the same natty, different verse, Ohio State over Georgia. You may think, Carson, wow, that's really sad. You guys were wrong on everything. That's the best we've ever done, I think.
I think it is.
I notoriously, a couple of years back, picked North Carolina to win the ACC, and then they went out and like lost week one, and I was like, hell yeah, that's how you do it right there. Just nuke it immediately, as we both did with Florida State.
One of our esteemed staffers actually picked OU to go undefeated one year, and they went 6-6. So that might be the single worst pick that we've ever seen. Although Florida State to win the ACC was pretty bad by me.
Hey, Florida State to make the ACC championship, we both had it. We both had the Seminoles. So.
And Oklahoma State. I mean, who the hell would have ever seen Oklahoma State being the only team in the history of the Big 12 to go 0-9?
Yeah.
Not me.
How much life have we led that like these were like not out these were not insane predictions at the time or by any means?
No, not at all.
Josie, shout out to the Big 12 for being insane. Shout out to Florida State for giving us so much joy. I think like the most insane one was UTSA. That was kind of like the schedule, probably a loss to Texas, didn't matter. Boise State had the same vibe. Like the schedule, lost to Oregon, didn't matter. So we got through that. Carson,
hey, how about next year we don't pick the ACC winner? That probably would save us from some embarrassment in 2025.
The ACC winner has not been kind to you. So something for you to look forward to, Carson, is looking dumb just like all of us, because that's what we do. Randall had
Liberty
as the group of five. Let's see. He had Oregon over Georgia, Oklahoma State over Utah. Excellent. Excellent. He didn't have 7-5, though, for Oklahoma. Got close. Got real, 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 real close. So, all right. That is close to the book on the field. Let's get to some off-the-field stuff. Happened back end of last week, I believe. All my days are running together. Curtis Lofton did announce that he is resigning as Oklahoma's general manager. That will become, I guess, effective immediately. Last day is February 1st, however you want to word that. So, Oklahoma on the hunt for a new GM. Gentlemen, let's just open up, Carson. We can head to you first. Simply put, I need an organization chart because, like, in the NFL, it makes a ton of sense to me. What does the GM do? What does the president of football ops do? What's the scouting team for? What's the head coach? Right now, man, we've got NIL, portal, high school recruiting, the house settlements coming in. How do you go through your roster and decide all that? High school versus college. Right now, this year, you're having to cut your roster down from whatever it was to 105. Man, this is a
coaching carousel.
Yeah,
coaching carousel is in full spin.
I don't envy anyone who is like, I don't envy NFL GMs anyway, because that sounds like a lot of work. And this is a job with like no real guidance, and everyone's kind of learning on the fly.
Yeah, I mean, you texted me this in the group chat that I have with you and Hoove. This is all so damn confusing to me. Having a quote CEO, someone that runs the ship, though they're not the head coach in college football, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. So, I mean, I will be totally honest. I don't have the best insight on this, but it's confusing.
Yeah,
Yeah,
none of
you
us
look at.
have the best insight. Curtis Lofton didn't have the best insight. You know, he's going to the ministry versus being a GM at his alma mater for, was it 400,000 a year he was making? Something like that, 200? I can't remember. But yeah, man, it's crazy. The best analogy we've seen, I think we've all seen this, is that you're building the airplane while it's in the air, right? You're flying the thing and trying to figure out how fast it can go, what it's capable of. Is it safe? And that's a great analogy for where college football is, especially right now in the organizational structure of general managers and player personnel guys, as you're building the plane while it's in the air.
No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops. Just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
I used to love my morning coffee until it stopped loving me back. The bloating, the discomfort, it just wasn't worth it anymore. Then I found Everyday Dose, coffee with benefits. It's real coffee blended with mushrooms, collagen, and nootropics. Now I get my morning ritual without the crash or the discomfort. The Black Friday sale is on. Get 61% off your first coffee plus starter kit, a free A2 probiotic creamer, and over $100 in free gifts. Plus, you could win $100 cash or even get your entire order refunded. Head to everydaydose.com/podcast or use code podcast at checkout.
I always feel the pressure to find the perfect gift for my relatives. In this case, whether you're sending an unforgettable gift or treating yourself to everyday perfection, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. For me, I'm not just into steaks. I like all types of meat. That's why I'll usually get the Winter's Best Seller Pack. It comes with juicy fillets, chicken breasts, pork chops, and even burgers. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. A family-owned company with over 100 years of experience in the meat industry. Save big on unforgettable gifts with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide and earn an extra 20% off select favorites during their cyber sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to omahasteaks.com to get 50% off site-wide plus an extra 20% off select favorites and more limited-time deals during their cyber sale. And use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
Well, and we saw last week too, guys, even as we get, I think there's been a belief that as we get closer and closer to the House settlement being enacted, like the ink dries on all that, then it could be like, finally, we have some guidance. And then every government organization under the sun who was asked to chime in on, it's like, oh, by the way, you need to abide by this to abide by Title IX. You do this, you do that. Like, it's not going to suddenly end just when we get the House settlement. And, yeah. And who I know that you've been following a lot of that stuff.
In addition, you have policy changes when in an election year when there are regime changes. So it's like, okay, this is okay. So here's how college football 4 years in, we think we got a handle on it. Started in 2021, here it is 2025. What do you mean the House says we have to do this? What do you mean Trump wants to do that? What we just figured this out. So every 4 years, guys, has the potential of doing some kind of about face.
Yeah, it's you get different, you know, government officials in different spots, mm-hmm. and everyone reads stuff differently, as we know from. You just look at like the different NCAA court cases, how across the country they are. So it's a, I know I say this a lot, and I sound like a broken record, but this is like a situation in college football that until everyone comes together, and says, we're going to stop suing people when we don't get our way individually. Appointing Nick Saban as the college football commissioner tomorrow is not going to fix it if we still operate under this. Like, the NFL is a private business. The teams agree, hey, when we pass the rule and all the owners vote on it, we're going to abide by that rule. And the New York Jets aren't taking the league to a lawsuit because they get a draft pick. You know what I mean? Like, whatever the situation would be, it makes it like very, very hard to figure out how we're going to get on the same playing field and moving forward if there's not something like that. Maybe if you rally around like a college football commissioner or something, schools are more likely to sign a thing. It's like, yes, we will just roll with it. But it, as we roll through, good luck. And that's all part of the headache of like the GMs and head coaches and athletic director, every bit of the athletic department. It's like, it not only is this role new, but the sport is a moving target in itself, even if all the roles are cemented.
Yeah. And Ryan, Congress, if you think about it, I mean, if you think like a politician, think like a businessman here, Congress has missed the opportunity to make these people employees, these people being the athletes, and then tax the hell out of them for their earnings. Oh, you made $1 million in NIL? Yes, we'd like you to come over here and meet our friends from the IRS. You're going to be paying some heavy taxes on that $1 million NIL package. It's a revenue stream for tax collectors. What are they waiting for?
I think they're waiting for the Durkins to be the ones that or is it the Pruitts? No, it's the Pruitts. Sorry, not the Durkins. The Pruitts, to make sure that instead of handing out money in McDonald's bags, they're just going to do all the tax forms in McDonald's.
Right, exactly.
It's a recycling measure as well. So we'll see there. That is the nasty underbelly of college football that I don't like talking about. Here's the fun stuff I do like talking about. Let's spin forward. It's way too early season right now. Dealer Shorts, let's start here. We'll do our way too early top 25s and then work our way through some win totals and what the people out in the desert are telling us. But a bunch of way too early top 25s are out there. Let me toss this to you, Carson. Two notable ones. On three had Oklahoma at 18. Then if you pull up ESPN's, not only are they not in the top 25, they're not in the way too early version of receiving votes, the others getting consideration. I think it kind of shows you the spread of expectations for Oklahoma heading into 2025 is a bit of a choose your own adventure.
No, it totally is. And I feel like that maybe is fair, just seeing that John Mateer is not proven at the SEC level. I think the guy has a lot of talent. But this season, if he's good, they can absolutely be someone competing with the best teams in the nation, competing for a playoff spot. But if he is not the right fit for OU, they absolutely could go 6-6, 5-7. Something OU fans would hate to think about, but has been more or less the reality lately. So I do think that there's a lot to be said about how wide that gap is, but I don't think it's wrong either.
I feel like we're in the era of right now, at least, whether you're super juiced about it, you can see John Mateer, you can go take the defense, add just like a top 50 offense. And the team already went 6-6 with one of the worst offenses in the country. You can take that step forward. Or if you're like very skeptical about it, but I kind of feel like Oklahoma, at least for this year, is in the Texas territory of, they have talent and they have the name. So they're probably going to be in some of these preseason top 25s. Because how many years was it that Texas, we knew that they weren't going to be any good and they're in the top 25? We don't know what this Oklahoma team is going to be, but I don't begrudge anyone for looking around and going, Mateer plus defense, it could get a lot better.
Yeah, if you take away the injuries, okay, you can't factor in injuries when making your preseason picks, but you take away the injuries, Oklahoma's going to be pretty good on defense, we think. You think they're going to be improved on offense. And really, if you look at 2024, that's all they needed to be, was better on offense than what they were. Don't lose the game against Tennessee. Don't lose the game against Missouri, right? And a couple others that they had a chance to make an impact. Right now, guys, you're going to say I'm crazy. I think it was betonline.ag had Oklahoma's win total for 2025 at 7 right now. I'm a little torn on that. I think that number's kind of right in the middle, but it's a super hard schedule. We know that. Okay, so that schedule's pretty scary. But we think Oklahoma's going to be better. Like, I could see 8, which is amazing that we're saying 8 should be the floor. That's amazing to think about that for OU football. But that's where they are. But I could also see 5. I could also see certainly 6. So
yeah,
the over works for me, but the schedule doesn't. And so I'm starting to think maybe the under probably is the safe play. But here's the deal. Follow my lead. Follow my math here, okay? 1950, 1975, 2000. It's 2025, guys. Oklahoma's going to win the national championship. That'll be. Think about it. Think about it. Every 25 years, the math tells us Oklahoma wins the national title, right?
The math would also tell us they're in their longest title drought since winning their first national title.
Correct.
And they've not been close, like close since 2017, and the program's trending the other way.
Well, but the last time they won a national title, they were coming off a 7-5 season.
How about I've got some math for you, John. 6-7, 10-3, against the easiest schedule the school's ever had. 6-7.
Your algebra there, you're missing two letters in your algebra, B and V.
Yeah. B and V equals question mark. Yes. I think that's what we're trying to solve for, what that is. Now, it feels like everything and nothing's on the table. I don't know. It's such a huge spread because, like, you go down it, go case by case. Arch got some huge experience at Texas this year. They're losing a lot, but they've recruited really well. Sark's shown that he can recruit there, but you go down, what's Ole Miss going to be, right? With they're going to recruit really well. They're going to portal really well, but losing Jackson Dart, you look at some of the lot, like Missouri's a razor's edge, and I guess you played them without Brady Cook. So what does losing Brady Cook mean? Some of that stuff. You get LSU coming back around, although I feel like LSU's going to be better. But you also have to go to Alabama, and you're subbing Tulane for Michigan, who closed the season really, really well. It becomes a I think you can talk yourself into anything here, which is why so often a total is set at like 7.5 or 8.5. And I think it's kind of telling that Oklahoma's at 7. Cause I think that tells you, even Vegas kind of like, you guys tell us.
You're right. You could talk yourself into just about either side of the fence right here, but get this right now, according to FanDuel. Okay. Oklahoma has the 17th best odds of winning the national title in 2025, 17th best odds. That doesn't mean they're the 17th best team. It just means they, odds-wise, they have the 17th best odds. Plus 6,500. If you know how the betting thing works, the favorite right now is Ohio State at plus 450. 450. Texas is second at plus 650. Oregon is tied with Texas at plus 650. So Oklahoma at 6,500, plus 6,500. I don't know. Is that 10 times worse than what Texas and Oregon are at? I don't know how that works mathematically, but it just right now, if you want that easy money, take the over, lay your money on 65 plus 6,500 Oklahoma and bet on that every 25 years thing that I told you about. Boom. You're in the money for Christmas. It's going to be a great Christmas for you.
I would hope that you have a lot more than just Christmas money if you're going off that. Yeah, 25, that number is really interesting because if you look at FanDuel, Mateer is 25-1 to win the Heisman Trophy. Those odds have come out. He's the 6th quarterback in the SEC. Guys ahead of him, Nussmeier, Manning, Nico, Lenora Sellers, DJ Lagway. Oklahoma wants to play 5 of those guys. Four of those 5 there. And then Mateer comes in at 6. So just interesting to see there. We've seen this before with like Jackson Arlo. We know about him, not much. You're the quarterback at Oklahoma. You've always got a shot though. So we got that going. We shall see. Hey,
on the tier, Ryan, something that, you know, who's he going to throw the football to is the first question, right? You get a couple of receivers back healthy. You get a couple of portal guys that maybe they're better than what you think they are because they played in an FCS school or Division II school last year, whatever. Maybe everybody, if everybody's good, everybody's healthy, the offense should be better. You've got a better offensive coordinator. You got a better quarterbacks coach, all that stuff, right? Everything's going to be better. What about the offensive line? How much better are they going to be? Well, talking to the guys that I talked to for the Mateer story that I did, again, Oklahoma Sooners on SI.com, check that out, because it's one of those long reads, right? Long form storytelling. It's worth your time, because these guys that I talked to, Chris King, the radio guy, and Joe Londergan, the Washington Cougars on SI, one of our sister websites, they both talked about how the offensive line was at times a little bit of patchwork last year for Washington State, a little bit of mix and match, guys coming up, you know, that hadn't played before, guys without experience, guys being moved around. And John Mateer made it work because he's that athletically gifted. He's that talented. So that might be something that fans want to look for, is who's the offensive line? Maybe next year it doesn't matter. Who's the receivers? Maybe next year it doesn't matter. I don't know.
We will see. Ben Arbuckle hard at work in winter workouts, currently getting those guys in. They'll hit the field here in a couple of weeks when spring football gets up and running. And as always, you guys know, Oklahoma Sooners on SI.com, the place to be for wire-to-wire spring football coverage. Hey, real quick, just 2 seconds. I know we don't do a ton of NFL here, but good news on the Baker Mayfield front is Liam Cohen staying as the Bucs offensive coordinator. It looks like the Jaguars actually just fired Trent Baalke as a result of, first off, no one's ever enjoyed working with him. It's kind of unbelievable that he was still there, and that, shout out to the Jags for being this late in the process and firing your GM. 2 thumbs up. But that's good news for Baker. We'll watch Jalen Hurts this Sunday as him and the Eagles, Lane Johnson, that crew, take on Tressway's Washington Commanders. That's how I prefer to think of them, Tressway's Commanders. They don't let him kick anymore, but when he does well. So obviously, Sooners on the NFL, ton of NFL flavor. The Chiefs love Oklahoma, as you know. We'll have all of that rolling. Is Jordan Phillips still in Buffalo? Are we well beyond that era?
No, I think he's back with them. Okay. I think he left to go to Arizona. I think he's back with them.
He was back. I know this because in the warmups on Sunday, he had a winter coat on his jersey, and he took it off for the game.
That's right.
I was
puffy coat in warmups. Yeah,
incredible. Incredible.
I saw a tweet from NFL today or yesterday. OU's got 9 players in the championship game weekend, which is way more than everybody else, any other school. That's amazing. Most of them are Chiefs. But still, that's amazing.
Yeah, the Kansas City Chiefs have made sure that Oklahoma alumni have plenty of Super Bowl rings all over the place here the last couple of years. Oklahoma Sooners on SI.com, a little conference championship stuff for the OU performances out of that, as well as, again, the Transfer Talk series. Just every day, check it. It's going to be there, as well as the softball stuff. We'll talk about softball here in a second. Let's get off the grass and on to the hardwood momentarily. Kind of a weird week for coverage on the basketball front, as both the Sooner men and the Sooner women played South Carolina this past weekend. Very different results. Both of them are on a bye week this week, meaning no midweek game, back in action. Let's start with the good vibes half coming off the weekend. Oklahoma, the men, Porter Moser and co, get on the board, Carson, against South Carolina. It was a little touch and go there early second half, and you're going, this is not happening, but a really good final 10 minutes for the Sooners. Carson, as they roll out of that, what was kind of the big change, the big shift there late for Oklahoma that you saw against the Gamecocks?
No, you hit the nail on the head. That first 20 minutes for both teams was disgusting. There were more turnovers than made baskets combined. It was gross. It looked like OU from the past few games, even against good teams like Georgia, Texas, Texas A&M, and Bama. It's not the basketball you wanted to see, but credit where it's due. They looked very good in the second half. Once they had the lead for the entire game until I think 5 minutes into the second half. Once South Carolina took the lead, they did not step off the pedal. They looked very, very good. Some good ball movement. Jeremiah Fears woke up. Jalen Moore woke up. It was just what you want to see, what this team can be. It's, I think when this team does play to its full potential, it's a tournament team. Not to say that they're going to make the Final Four, win the Natty, anything like that. But they showed what they can do when they do fire on all cylinders. So that was good. And I mean, it was needed. This is a loss that would have been a quad three loss if they lost. It's a quad three win, so it doesn't do a whole lot for their resume, but it keeps them kind of in it. They're, I think, 51 right now in the net. So not where they want to be, but definitely keeps them from where they would have been, probably in the 60s or 70s. So definitely a good result, even if it wasn't the prettiest game.
You're a Lenardi junkie. That win kept them off the last four in. They're in the last four buys.
Last four buys, yep.
Yeah. They've kind of floated. I think a couple days ago they were like the top of the last four buys. Then they're like third. But anyway, that's kind of where they're at. It seems like Forsythe and Mo have been really, really nice rotation. If Mo just doesn't foul out and Forsythe, I made this comparison on radio, and this may go directly to the heart of one Mrs. Hoover, but they do this in very different ways. Do not mistake what I am saying. However, hit the Wayback Machine on the Oklahoma City Thunder. When there was a really, really bad run of things for the first unit to start the game, Billy Donovan would turn, he'd point to Hamidou Diallo, and he says, go just give that team energy and force them to raise their energy levels and kind of get after it again. That's kind of what Forsythe reminds me of. Not the, like, jump out of the gym athlete, obviously, or anything that Hami is, but it's like, man, if they have a lull to start a half, all Porter Moser has to do is put Forsythe in the game, and he's battling for rebounds, doing all the right things. That just seamless, like, advanced pass that he had to Jeremiah Fears for a really sweet layup was just, like, so calm and collected in transition. It feels like they legitimately found something as far as just a way to bring up those energy levels, man, when they put Forsythe in.
I like your analogy too. 2027 slam dunk champion Forsythe. That'd be amazing, like Hamidou Diallo did. I like you're right. When he comes in, he brings a different energy. He's setting screens. He's diving on the floor. He's taking charges. He's making smart plays, heady plays. And you know, when he gets an opportunity, he makes shots. So you got to love the fact that Porter recognizes that, inserts him into the game to change the energy.
Carson, it's the bye week. I know Porter talked about that a little bit here in. Not here, but in the post-game stuff. Do you get the sense that on one hand, it was basically, what, one or two turnovers in the second half, and that kind of, you finally saw mistake-free basketball, a situation where Porter would rather have played on Tuesday or Wednesday and tried to see some of that momentum, or taking the step back and having a full week to prepare for a really, really big game against Arkansas? That you got to go get that one, and it almost kind of erases it. Not that Arkansas's great, but that it's another one of those bottom of the SEC right now, that they play Georgia tonight, right? But they're still winless technically as of right now. Kind of how did Porter kind of slice that, you think?
Yeah, he definitely said that there is good and bad to having kind of a quote bye week. But I think genuinely this is a good thing for the team. They need some rest. They really had a brutal stretch. I mean, Bama and A&M, those are two teams that I think both have good chances to make the Final Four this year. Georgia is so much better than people thought they would be before the season. Texas, I mean, they're not amazing, but that's a team that is, it's very talented. They have the NIL money. They're going to have talent every year. Even when their record says they don't, they're going to be talented. So getting that win, I think it is probably best for them to get a couple days off, go straight to work. Porter said he was giving his guys, quote, a couple days off, and then they're getting back to it. And getting a win against Arkansas would be gigantic. Just 2-4 is a lot better than 1-5, even if it is one game different. That would be a big thing. Road wins are definitely valued a lot higher than home wins are in the net. So resume-wise, it's one of those things maybe sort of similar to South Carolina. A loss would do more to hurt them than a win would do to help them. But just avoiding that loss keeps them in the conversation. They have so many more games against very good teams. So, yeah, it's definitely, I think it definitely helps them to have a little bit of a break.
They'll be back in action 7:30 p.m. on Saturday out in Fayetteville. The kind of big news of the week, this came from all over the place in the basketball world. Arkansas freshman Boogie Flynn, he's going to miss the rest of the season due to a hand injury. That's 15 points per game right there for the Razorback. So big opportunity. We saw it went so well for 25 minutes against Texas A&M with a leading score out. Need to finish the job against the Razorbacks, certainly. Saturday night, 7:30, all of our game coverage per huge. Oklahoma Sooners on SI.com. A team that I think definitely is happy for the midweek bye would be the Sooner women. Reagan Beers did play. She played her normal allotment of minutes. Liz Scott did play. That was kind of some of the injury worry coming out of Thursday night. It did not matter. South Carolina handed Oklahoma their fourth worst loss in program history. Yikes, friends. It was bad. I don't know how else to say it. Going out there, getting just smothered in the first half or first quarter, excuse me. South Carolina never looked back. Oklahoma, like, got would get the ball to the restricted area and just couldn't split double teams. It was a legitimate adjustment period for the Sooners, it felt like, to contend with South Carolina's defense. You had Peyton Verhulst coming off a career high, only chip in 3 points. So I think the bye week is huge for Jenny Bronchek and the Sooners, just as far as Reagan Beers, get her as close to 100%, just because she was obviously able to play the last two games, but get her closer there. Liz Scott, make sure there's nothing else there, and kind of work on a whole week to just really, really aggressively work on cutting down the turnovers. That wasn't the issue against South Carolina, but that's something that obviously they need to curb in the rest of these games. On Sunday, they'll be back against Georgia. That's a 9-11 Georgia team. This is kind of the same territory as Missouri. One nice game at home, tune-up action before they head back out on the road for a big one. And that road game will be a road test in Baton Rouge. They'll take on Kim Mulkey and LSU. That would be next Thursday. But other than that, not like unexpected for Oklahoma to lose. Didn't really expect them to even be within 15-20, but 41 maybe was a bit much for my blood.
Yeah, Ryan, this was a shocker. To them, I would think. I was at that NCAA tournament game, Sweet 16 game against Notre Dame, 44-point loss.
Second round game.
Sweet 16 game, wasn't it? Was it second round?
It was a Norman, yeah. It was to get to the Sweet 16.
Notre Dame to the Sweet 16. That's right. That's right. Yeah. So it was the second round game. So I was at that game, and I remember they had a good season, right, at rebuilding after the Sherry Cole era, and it was like, hey, we had a good season, and oh my gosh, it came down hard. This felt worse. This felt like this felt like a WNBA team, right? This felt like somebody that, like, what are we doing on the floor with these guys? You could see the look on their face was a little bit shocked, a little bit stunned at how good South Carolina was. A couple of, just in the box score, I just noticed a couple of things, and I have to say this. The plus minus stat, which is sometimes worthless and sometimes very revealing. The plus minus on OU, I'm not going to assign any names. I'm just going to tell you, I'm going to read down the list and you're going to see the plus minuses were minus 27, minus 26, minus 25, minus 24, minus 23, minus 22. And then they had three more in double digits. And what that tells you is when that person is on the floor, is the other team gaining or losing, or are they plus or are they minus? And every Sooner was minus. It was, and a lot of them were minus, like I said, 27, 26. So that tells you right there, wow, how far Oklahoma's got to go to reach that level. Not that they ever will, but if they ever aspire to win a national championship, guys, that's what it looks like.
It was, there was no like, well, this play, it was a team out. Everyone took it together, it seemed like. But I guess like the recourse for that is South Carolina was number two. It's one of those things that Jenny Bronchek even said at the Missouri game, like they might have the two beside their name, but we know they lost UCLA. Sure. Since that, they hammered number nine TCU. That was a double digit victory over Texas. They are on a string of double digit victories, but those are kind of the ranked ones in there. Then obviously Oklahoma's the big one. So no shame in going out there, but they just not play well. So it doesn't help when South Carolina outshoots you from deep as well as what they were doing in the paint either. So not good, but hoping to get back on the right side against Georgia. And then we'll see as they head down to Baton Rouge. Real quick before we get out of here, on the softball front, D1 softball released their preseason top 25 this week. Number three for Oklahoma, just like Softball America's. I believe the USA Today ESPN poll also had Oklahoma at three. We wait for the NFCA poll around here. Sorry to our friends at the other polls, but we do recognize the Softball America and D1 softball. Also, exact same thing for the D1 softball preseason All-Americans, Ella Parker and Cassie Pickering, first teamers. Abby Dayton, a second teamer there. And they've got a ton of freshmen who might be some question marks to you guys. Nine new freshmen coming in, five transfers. Man, I wish I knew more about those. Don't worry, folks. Just head to Oklahoma Sooners on SI.com. Monday, we rolled out our Fresh Faces series. That is, of course, all nine of Oklahoma's new freshmen. Talked to eight of those. Didn't talk to Sophia Bordy, who is obviously reclassified coming up in. Don't worry, I am going to reach out to some people and see. We won't be able to talk to Bordy right now, but see if we can't get some insight on her and the kind of player she is. So nine new freshmen, that series started off. We started with the pair of Okies on Monday and Tuesday, Katie Lee McKay and Chaney Helton. Sydney Barker was today's story. Again, one a day. As soon as that's done, we're going to do the exact same thing. Rinse, repeat with the transfers. As soon as that's done, guess what? It'll be game week. It'll be time to do all the position previews and all that fun stuff. So it seems like we've gotten some good reaction initially here on those softball series. I know people are ready for that to get rolling. And with us being about 3 weeks away from softball or 2 weeks away, we're still like 1 week away from the baseball preseason really starting to get in full swing. I know we've had a couple perfect games, stuff out there, but we're about a week away from all the baseball preseason plaudits rolling in, which will be a similar spot. Oklahoma looking to chart their way through the SEC. Great pitching rotation, going to be a top 25 team around a bunch of places. So have we missed anything else? It's been a, I don't know. It feels like the offseason weeks are short but long, if that makes sense to anybody. It's not like action-packed at times, but a lot to cover across a bunch of different sports.
Check out the Mateer story. Click on the football link and scroll down. It's right up there because that's installment number one of a 14-part series that's coming down the pike as we speak. Carson's going to have a lot of that content. I'm going to have some of it as well. And who knows? They may sign some kids out of the transfer portal still to come. We don't know. But, yeah, keep an eye on that series.
We shall see there. Other than that, hope everyone enjoys their conference championship weekend as we roll in. For those of you sickos that have been up late with me watching the Aussie Open, we love you too. Go, go Madison Keys. Go, go Ben Shelton. That'll do it for us. Hey, we've pumped a lot of content out there. We're doing a lot, obviously. If you're just going, man, you keep saying all this stuff. What's like the one place I could go to where it would just all fall into my lap? Just go to Twitter at Sooners on SI. Follow us there. Or you can follow Hoove at John E. Hoover. I'm at underscore Ryan Chapman. Our friend Carson is at Carson D. Field. You can see great dog pics from Carson as the pup is in town and looking as cute as ever. I don't post as many as I should have of Scout the dog, but she's being sassy and she deserves it. So we will post
Scout and Lucy have definitely got to meet each other at some point.
Yes. We got to have the Sooners on SI dog hang as makes it a little bit more difficult for you to bring Scout up to see Herschel and the crew up there in the 918, but we can make that thing happen for sure. Guys, be on the swivel. Any defensive coordinator news, whatever we hear, as soon as we hear it, it'll obviously be at Oklahoma Sooners on SI.com. That's the next big check mark to kind of come off the board. No matter how that thing goes. But until then, for Hoove, for Carson, I'm Ryan Chapman. We'll talk to you guys next Wednesday.